Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the Enseda Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the Enseda Coast Salish territories of the Ketse, Kwikwetlem, and Stolo First Nations. And at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie. I've got a really exciting show for you today. Typically Tuesdays has gone global, baby! Okay, not really. Let me break it down for you. Shortbox Comics Fair. Have you ever heard of it? If you haven't, I'm about to let you know what it is. If you have, good to see you in the Cool Kids Club. So, Shortbox Comics Fair, it is a month-long, digital-only comics fair running throughout October, from October 1st to the 31st, showcasing 100-plus new comics titles from independent artists from all around the world. That's why it's global, baby. And it's so exciting. This is truly one of the events that I look forward to the most every year since I started going to the fair. And I really have to say, as well as a lover of comics, it is a place where I find some of the best stuff that I have ever read. I had the very distinct pleasure of sitting down with the creator and founder of Shortbox Comics Fair, Zainab, who is incredibly charming and thoughtful and so kind for agreeing to talk with me right around her bedtime. Zainab is from the UK, so the time difference was doing things, and it made our conversation probably better in some way or another. We're going to be talking about her career in the comics industry, how she goes about curating the fair all by herself, and so on and so forth. It's really exciting. She's also going to be dropping some recommendations for this year's fair. Truly, honestly, if you are a lover of comics, this is an event that you don't want to miss out. And if you need to be convinced any further, here is my conversation with Zainab from Shortbox Comics Fair here on 90.1 FM, CJSF, Typically Tuesdays, right after this PSA.
This is BirdNote. Finding the right birding group can be tricky for anyone. But finding a birding group in a community where the primary language is not your own can be near impossible.
Chicago has very large immigrant communities from Mexico and Venezuela and South and Central America. And so we want those folks to come out and go birding with us.
Daniela Herrera is a co-founder of the Chicago BIPOC Birders, a birding group created as a safe space for Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And she says, although many Spanish-speaking immigrants come with a strong knowledge and appreciation for birds, they're often left with little to no birding community because of the language barrier.
And so I organize bilingual Spanish and English bird walks throughout the city. And these events are not for folks to practice Spanish. The goal is really to get more Spanish-speaking folks out into nature.
When doing these outings with immigrants, it can be really special to encounter familiar migratory birds and make their new city feel a lot more like home.
There's this connection that's remade between people who are seeing this bird here and the last time they saw it was in their home country.
Learn more about community-centered birding on the new season of Bring Birds Back. Available now in your favorite podcast app or at birdnote.org. I'm Deja Perkins.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Really excited to talk with you today because I've got a really special person on air with me. Zainab is the founder of Shortbox Comics Fair. It is an annual digital month-long comics fair. And we're going to be talking about that because it's held every year right now in October. Thank you for joining me on the show, Zainab.
Thank you for having me, Leslie.
Tell me a little bit first about kind of like your background. So tell me about your career in the comics industry. How did we get here to where we are now, where Shortbox Comics Fair is one of the most anticipated comics festivals of the year for anybody who's a comic enthusiast?
Well, to be honest, I never sort of thought about a career in comics, but I guess it has become one. So my journey with comics, it's a long one, began, I guess, around 13 years ago. At that time, I'd just completed my degree in English literature, and I was looking for a way to, you know, an outlet to continue my writing in some way. And I'd recently, my dissertation, I had done on comics, because I wanted to do something that I would find engaging, and spending so much time with the literature dissertation can be incredibly boring. And when I began reading comics, I really got into them. And so I wanted to continue sort of reading comics, but also writing, and the blog seemed like a perfect way to marry that. And I think one of the things that served me really well was that I did not have any expectations or preconceived notions about what comics are or what they should be. And also because I came to comics as a relatively older person, when I started writing about it, I feel like it connected with people in a different way, because all of that came across in my writing. I wasn't, you know, there was no motivation behind my writing in terms of like, you know, or I want to get a job from this, or I want to make money for this, you know, or I'm trying to network with X, Y, and Z. It was just purely, oh, this is something I'm interested in at the moment. And then from there, I had a few writing opportunities come my way in terms of writing for various publications like The Guardian, Publishers Weekly, you know, The Fader, AV Club. But again, that was never something that I saw as a career, because it's just money isn't there. the money was not there like 13 years ago, and it's not there even less now, you know, for somebody writing about comics. So I think that was, so I started writing in 2011, and I think I did it for about 4 years. And I think the best thing that came from the blog, I came out of it with like a really loyal readership. And also because I'd never been the kind of like shock jock writer, you know, it's all, you know, for me, I'm always interested in why something works, you know, why it's been done that way. If it doesn't work, why doesn't it work? So that, I feel like, again, looking at it retrospectively, it served me really well, because a lot of artists were also reading the blog. And when it came to publishing books down the line, they were interested in working with me. When I wrapped up the blog, I always had readers saying, oh, you know, if you put, we love your recommendations, everything you write about, you know, I go out and I buy it straight away. And if you put together like, you know, a curated sort of bundle of comics, you know, we'd buy it. So I began thinking, and at that time there were a few, what was really in vogue at the time were these sort of like boxes where you could get like, oh, it'd be a subscription box of, you know, full of geek goodies, or, you know, if you had like the more high-end stuff would be like, oh, this is like a curated bundle of magazines, food magazines from Persia. So I thought, oh, you know what I'll try and do is put together like a little bundle I'll curate a bundle of comics, and I'll put them in a box and I'll sell them. So I began doing that. But when I began doing that, the artists that I reached out to about whether they'd be interested in having their comic, as part of this bundle, people always wanted to make a new comic. So that kind of led into like, oh, if you're making a new comic, then I may as well print it, which it makes me a printer of new comics, which is a fine distinction between then publishing or I may as well edit them since we're making them. And then it sort of just gradually became like, oh, well, I guess I'm a publisher now. So that was Shortbox, and I did that for 8 years and published over 60 comics. Won some awards, lost more than I won. Still sore about that. But it was a really good time. But I think it's tricky because when you're a one person outfit, and like in the purest sense, like there was never any funding, there was never any investment, there were no grants that we received. It was me putting my money into it, and then whatever money profits we make go straight back into sort of like printing more books, paying the artists, that kind of situation. So I feel like we grew to a point, and this is the royal we because it was just me, where it become the visibility and the perceptions from the outside became larger than what was the reality of the imprint. So the reality of the imprint was it's one person doing, the copywriting, doing the social media accounts, doing the printing, going to all the conventions, everything. You're the person doing all these jobs, which are most of them you're not even very good at. I'm not very good at marketing. I'm not very good at, all these kind of things, but you just have to do them. You're doing all these things, and it kind of means that you sort of lose focus from the thing that you actually are good at, which, in my opinion, what I'm good at is editing, curating comics. But it became difficult in terms of working with people because, from the outside, I guess, again, this is going to sound very pretentious, but it seems like a professional operation. I guess, like, if because at one point it was my readership, and people are like, oh, I know that, that's Shortbox, that's Zainab. And you recognize all these names that you're interacting with as well. And then you grow to a point where you don't recognize all the names, and the names don't know, oh, that's Zainab from the blog, behind this. So they just treat you like a company, and they're like, why don't you have free returns? Why don't you have this? And it's like, dude, I'm like a one person company. I don't have any money. And then the same with artists, unfortunately, like they want to be sent on book tours, and it's like, oh, I can't pay myself, never mind send you on a book tour, so that became something that was a difficult, I mean, I was negotiating it, but then it's after 8 years it becomes like, oh, do I want to carry on, what, because you sort of like take stock every now and again. And I think I just got really tired of doing all these jobs. And I wanted to focus on doing the part that I actually liked, which was curation more than anything, I love being able to facilitate the creation of new work and also like connecting that with readers. I feel like those are really my strengths. And I'm not like a this may sound a little odd, but I'm not a big risk taker. Like if I have an idea, like it'll percolate for like a year, 2 years, and I just go over all the ways that, oh, could it go wrong, could it go right. So I was thinking about the fair for a good 3 years probably before I actually did anything, because I started thinking, oh, digitally, there might be less work. Started from there, there'd be less work, there'd be less cost. And then when COVID happened, of course all these comics conventions, these comic festivals, they couldn't take place, and a lot of them were trying to pivot to digital. But so at a comic convention you go to wherever the you go to the hall, there are all these tables, artists taking part, and they were, everybody was really struggling with the digital aspect. And I was looking at all these, there was nothing they were offering like the audience. They were like, oh, well, a convention has been cancelled, but you can check out our website, where we have a link to all our artists' websites. And that did make sense to me because I can access these artists' website at any time. So how are you offering me something? How is that a festival? How is that something different that audiences actually want to visit? So I started thinking about what would a digital fair look like in terms of people actually having an incentive to visit that event, digitally. And that's how I kind of came up with the idea. Well, it would sort of be the same as going to an in-person convention hall. So it's an online, it's a website. Every artist essentially has just one comic, but all the comics are new. So I feel like the fact that they're new is a huge draw because none of those comics have ever been released anywhere before. So the fair releases over 100 new comics all in one place. Really diverse in terms of style, approach, artists, because the other benefit you have, of course, with being online is that it can be global in a way that an in-person event can't. People from we have people from the Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, Australia, Italy, Spain, all over the world, literally, Egypt. So that's how we ended up where we are today, effectively. And now I think it's the fourth year, I always forget. The fourth year this year, we have like over 100 new comics that are available now on the website. And I guess the other thing that sort of gives it USP is that it's not an event that goes on forever. So you know that all these comics, although they're new, they're also only going to be available for a limited time, which is the month of October. Long
Yeah.
answer.
No, not at all. That's really great. I think we covered a lot there. Actually, one of the things I was kind of surprised to hear was about how long you've been thinking about the fair. Because I had, in preparation for today's conversation, I had actually listened to your interview on Off Panel,
Oh, yeah.
and you had mentioned, like obviously, like the pandemic thing, and the first fair happened in 2021, which in Canadian terms is kind of like the year following the pandemic, after we saw, like locally, after we saw like Toronto Comic Arts Fest and like Vancouver Comic Arts Fest go online. So I was thinking like, oh, okay, I guess that would make quite a lot of sense. And I really respected what you shared on that podcast as well, which was like, what are people supposed to do at this apparent, remote comics arts fest when you just go into the artist's website instead, and there's not much of like that almost like a fair experience there. So I'm really surprised to hear that you've been thinking about it for so long, actually.
So COVID really helped crystallize like the idea of it in terms of, oh, we need to do something new. The reason which I touched upon what I was thinking about, because I was really tired of doing the print side of things. And so I was considering digital, but I didn't have like the full sort of like, formed idea. So I was just thinking, oh, okay, we could do digital because I've never really sold, even when we were doing print comics. I never really sold, the print books in a digital format. So briefly, we had a Patreon, and I would approach artists to do a short comic, and then it would be published on Patreon every month. I think, was it every 2 weeks or every month?
And
And I
that
really
was with
enjoyed
the
doing that.
publisher, right? The publishing, not the
Yeah,
fair, but the publisher.
with the publishing, but it was digital. There was no print version of that. It was just solely a digital effort. So again, like it's just, I think there was just so much pressure. A lot of it sort of self-imposed, and so that's why. I really wanted to. I knew I wanted to carry on being involved in the comics in some way. So I was thinking about. I don't think I was thinking about a fair, but I was thinking of like, oh, digital. How do we digital? That's what I was thinking of. Could we go digital? How do we do it? I didn't have an idea for the fair because, to be frank, at that point, another idea that I've always had was to do an in-person fair. And I did get quite advanced in terms of those kind of preparations. You know, went to look at a hall, got in touch about hiring tables and chairs and this kind of thing. And again, it always comes to this point where money, the bane of all our existences. You know, again, like my strengths are like organization, curation. That's my strength, and I'm absolutely horrible at writing grant applications. I don't think I've written a few, and none of them have been successful. So yeah, but with COVID, what really helped crystallize it, not to sound mean, was sort of like other people's failures. So, and again, I really appreciate that it was like a big turnaround for all these fairs, or we're not doing it in person. But it was like a, it's always it's just interesting to see, because some people were trying to charge, you know, they were like, oh, you have to pay this amount of money to access our website, and then you will get to see. And it was just, oh, what would we get to see? And it's like, oh, you'll get to see links to the artist's website. And it's like, but you know, as a reader, and I always approach things as a reader foremostly, because you know, there's not enough money in this joint that you could really approach it as a business. So it's, well, you know, I can right now, I can go on the computer, I can visit any artist website that I want, I can go to any website shop that I want. So how is you collating all those websites and putting them in one place? How is that attractive for anyone? How does that become an event? I mean, why would anybody want to visit that? You know, it's not offering anything. So seeing that then got me thinking, oh, well, you know, actually, I could do a digital fair, and then how would it work?
On the same podcast on Off Panel, you mentioned, and you've mentioned earlier, you know, one of the reasons, I guess, why you have as faithful as a following that you have is because you're able to pick out the stuff that you like. You're not like, you know, when you were doing critique and when you were publishing, and also when you're curating the fair. You're not just picking stuff that like you think that speaks to everyone. It's kind of like, well, I think it's good. I want to know with regards to the fair what the curatorial process is like, and how do you do that, putting together a fair that helps people discover new stuff that also speaks to good taste. And you, I mean, I think you mentioned at one point you received like 1,600 or something submissions last year for the fair, and this year I mean, probably, you know, quite a lot. How do you whittle down all of those submissions into the neat like 100 plus that you exhibit?
So in terms of curation, I feel like this is going to be a very unsatisfying answer, because it's one of the things I get asked like the most is like, how do you choose, you know, like how do you what's your selection process? And I do believe that there is such a thing as just having an eye. I'm really sorry. It's not a science. But I think like it's connected. I feel like it's connected to what I touched on earlier, is that I came into comics when I was older. That's one factor. I didn't have any preconceived ideas about what they are, what they should be, you know, which meant like I read everything, you know, like how people are into one specific subset or one genre, or you know, they read like the same authors over and over again, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but I'm just saying like I was genuinely very open, and I read like all alternative comics, you know, abstract comics, mainstream comics, big fan of Batman, you know, all this kind of thing. Just read like everything, you know, Euro comics, read a load of manga, love manga. So and I also, you know, beyond that, I feel like it's really important to also not just read comics. You know, I'm a big prose reader. I love crime novels. I read lots of contemporary fiction. And And then that extends to like other media in terms of like film, TV. I watch things in various, I love K-drama. I watch Indian movies. I watch American, I watch Danish movies. And then, of course, I've been brought up on British TV. I watch lots of anime, cartoons. I feel like that's so vital in terms of building a curatorial sense. Because it's not, you don't have like a narrow viewpoint in terms of what something should be or what is good. Like it just, all those kind of influences and ideas come together. And I do think, like, again, in a way that may not make sense, unfortunately, I feel like it hones your sense of like, and to be frank, like I'm not looking for like, oh, this, the next big thing, the absolutely perfect comic. That's never been like an interest of mine. I'm just genuinely interested in like good work, fresh work, interesting work. So when people ask me like, oh, what, are you looking for anything particular? And I'm like, no. Which isn't, I know it's not always like the response that people want. Because then you go into like what makes, like things like good or good taste is like very subjective. So, and I feel like that serves me really well because then within the fair, we have like so many genres, we have so many different approaches, we have so many different styles. And if I'm allowed to blow my own trumpet, I feel like the connecting thread is that they're all just good. I don't think you could look at them and say, oh, well, what ties all these 100 comics together? I don't think there is one thing. I just think it's just like an ability that I have. And it's, if that sounds arrogant, it's okay because it's the only ability I have. It's just like an ability I have that like I can look at something and I can think, like when I'm looking through portfolios, you mentioned like we had like it was actually we had just under 2,000 submissions last year. But you so when
We
I look at something like I can click on like two or three images and I know whether I feel like it meets the standard or not. So I know for like, I mean, it is a lot of work, but it's also like something I really enjoy because I always love being introduced to, new art that I've not seen before. And it's not about like the work being bad. I feel like sometimes you can see something and it's germinating and it's just not quite there yet. So I also feel like when you try and make something or, in terms of like you're thinking about an audience or like you're thinking about, oh, this is going to make money or this is going to be popular, this is the formula. I feel like that's never going to work. And as a person, I do not have the ability to be enthusiastic about things that I am not interested in. That is, I don't know, like, if you're being kind, I guess we can interpret it as integrity, but I just feel like it's just, I just, it's just a lack. So, like, it makes no sense to me, like, to be like, oh, you know what, this person, like, I don't like the work, I don't like what's going on, but maybe they'll be popular. Like, if I don't believe in it, how am I just like, for me, that's such a big block. I can't sell it to anybody else, whether it's literally selling or in terms of like just even speaking about it and saying, oh, this is good when it's not good. That's never something that I've been able to do. Because I feel like whether it's, you're a producer, whether you're, you're publishing books, I think it's really vital like to have like a voice or like an idea in terms of like a remit, what are we doing, and like to be able to identify talent. I think like that's something that's really kind of missing from like the general media landscape, but then so many things are missing from the media landscape, so it feel like can't really crab about it. It's dire out there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, just like I really appreciate your honesty with that answer and just being really frank. Like,
One thing that I really resonated with was like this idea that taste is kind of like built, right? Like from a lot of different references. And I to be able to draw on no, not just comics to inform your taste, but also like the word, like the actual prose and like and other media, I think is really important. I think a lot of the times in the creative industries, there can be like this tunnel vision where maybe the stuff that's getting greenlit without being too disrespectful about it, I guess. The stuff that's getting greenlit is borrowing like frames, or like they're borrowing words or ways of doing things that resonated with people but maybe didn't resonate with themselves. And it's kind of like it gets lost in how the work that they're creating or the work that's being greenlit is actually done. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. I'm talking with Zainab, who is the founder of Shortbox Comics Fair. It is an annual digital-only month-long event where comic creators and cartoonists from around the world exhibit a new comic for you to read.
Check that out right now over at shortboxcomicsfair.com.
I wanted to talk a bit about the submissions, I guess. Because as mentioned before, like you get a lot of submissions just under 2,000. And this year, when the submissions were announced, you mentioned that you were hoping to have like a longer period for submissions, like 4 months, so that things could be kind of more accessible to the creators. It's really like a big open call, given that there's certain criteria that they have to meet. It has to be a new story, it has to be a new comic, and it has to be at least 16 pages. Would you be able to share a bit about the process of receiving pitches and then putting that together in the exhibition hall? And how do you approach creating the criteria for submissions for this open call that like anybody with internet access can like contribute to? And also talk about how accessibility factors into that.
So I'll start with the debunking, which is we don't take pitches. The way the process works is when applications are open, there's a very short application form. I think it asks for your name, an email, and then you can link to your portfolio, or any kind of website or Google Drive, you know, where your work is visible, whether that's samples of your illustration or comic work, it's up to you. And that's in terms of the application process, that's it. There's nothing else involved. Again, like in terms of wanting to make it very accessible and not ask for like, you know, all these things that have come across loads of forms. You know, you don't, some of them you lose a will to live when you're filling them in. I don't even know why all that information is necessary, like I've done it before. So keeping the form short and, you know, very just like your email, just samples of your work. And then the way it works is once the submission period has closed, I go through the submissions as they come in because it would be very daunting to go through, sit down and be like, okay, let's go through these 2,000 submissions. So I go through them as they come in. But once I've gone through them all, I shortlist as I go, and then I get in touch with everyone in terms of who's been accepted and who hasn't, and let those people, everybody know which way it's gone. And then in terms of the people that have been accepted, at that point they receive information about how to make their comic. I'm not involved at all in the making of the comic, so they don't have to pitch their ideas to me whatsoever. It's very, very independent. Again, like these are not comics that I'm publishing or Shortbox is publishing. These are like self-published works, like the fair's job is to platform them, but they're fully owned by the artists, you know, they retain the full rights and ownership. So they can make whatever kind of comic that they want. It's entirely up to them. So I don't see the comic until it's completed. I don't know what they're doing. It's up to them, you know what I mean? I do, of course, reserve the right to refuse any kind of comic if it's like just you, I feel like it's important to have that in case it's anything horrible. But that's never, touch wood, that's never had to happen. But yeah, and then when the deadline day is due, they go away. Once they're accepted, they receive various guidelines about, you know, formatting, all this kind of stuff. So they go away, they make the comic, they submit it on deadline day, and then I have kind of like 8 weeks to put a fair together. My favorite bit. In terms of accessibility, yeah, I mean, it was something that, again, like, well, I guess now I would be classed as middle class, but I grew up working class. I live in the north of England. A lot of it is very working class. I'm also, my parents are like first generation immigrants. I'm Muslim and Pakistani, so like from lots of crossover, and a woman, all these little marginalizations. So like accessibility in like multiple forms is something that's really important to me. So one of the, and I think with, again, like it's great with, I feel like with an online fair and that has like a potential global reach, there's no excuse not to include people. I think I just find it so weird. Like it still happens where a fair, you know, you get the announcement, oh, here's our lineup and everybody will be white. Or here's our lineup and this year is international and it's like three white people from Europe. That one always gets me when they say it's international and it's like a Swiss person and a Danish person and they're all white and it's like, oh, it's so international. So I just like, to me, I just like, you know, even not like being, oh, you're being woke or you're being like, it's just like, it's so boring. Like, they're, you know, guess what? Brown people, black people can make comics and they're really good. You know, like, women can make comics. So it's just like, I don't even find it like, it's not even something that I sort of feel embarrassed to say that, like, I set out to do because I'm not sitting there thinking, who made this comic? Was it a brown person? You know, like, I'm just, it's, oh, this work is really interesting, you know? And like, but at the same time, you do have to have like some degree of, you know, the idea of equity in your mind. So, like, somebody who is working class and, you know, not from like a comfortable background is not going to have had the same opportunities as somebody who's like comfortable and middle class, for example. So, you know, when you have more opportunities, you have more opportunities to grow, to be a better artist. So I do take those kind of factors into account. Like, yes, some, you know, some of the work may not be exactly where they want it to be, but there's, you know, there's a reason for that. And it still has to fall within like, you know, what we discussed previously, like it still has to have, you know, I still have those same standards. But again, it's something that you have to keep in mind. People around the world, you know, access is not the same, you know. So that's really important to me. And I feel like, and there's so, another way in which you try to be accessible was also charging a fee for being part of the fair. So traditionally, for in-person fairs, you always have to pay a table fee, and these fees have sort of like have started becoming incredibly extortionate. Like it can go to like $500, $600, you know, for you to hire a table for 2 days. And then you have for in-person fairs, of course, and you have the travel costs. You have to have like go find a place to stay, whether it's a hotel, Airbnb, whatever. So it can become like an incredibly expensive endeavor to simply, you know, take your books and table at a convention. So the first few years I did charge an exhibiting fee, although it was a low one. I think it was 40, £45. And I'm happy to say that when in all of the fairs, everybody made the exhibiting feedback. But also, I started thinking about whether that was really necessary. Because especially in terms of, because we do have a global reach, and in various foreign currencies, even £45 can sort of like translate to a lot of money if you're from like a, you know, which against like the pound and the dollar, lots of countries, is still very, very expensive when you convert the amount. So I feel like so this is the first year I'm trialing charging no exhibiting fee, but instead take a percentage of like the sales. So the way it works is hopefully like if the artist makes something, then I also make something. And if they don't make something, then obviously I haven't done my job right and I don't make anything either. And hopefully that's like a fair way of doing it. But yeah, and hopefully, you know, like I feel like in terms of accessibility, I'm not saying like I'm the standard bearer or anything, but I feel like, you know, these small things, hopefully, you know, they make a difference. Yeah, and I know like lots of people, like COVID is still like an issue for many, you know, chronically ill people, and immunocompromised people. And we all get quite a few messages saying that like, I can't go out to conventions anymore, but you know, I can visit this one, which is digital. So that's really nice. I'm glad like it fills that need for some people.
I think the first year when I checked out the fair, I was just really delighted by like the, I don't want to use the term necessarily, but the diversity of voices that were featured. I don't know. Maybe it's a North America thing. But I find that in North America, when folks want to like check out comics and stuff, it is still like very much like based in like we're gonna publish, you know, like only North American writers, essentially. And the most international thing that we're gonna get is like droves of like shonen manga, and that's kind of the extent of it. And so it was really exciting to see how folks from all over the world approached creating comics and the types of stories that they wanted to tell. And I mean, for me, I really have to be honest, like I think some of the best comics that I've read have been purchases from the fair. Like
That's so kind.
It's like you can really see how the people who sell their work there, just how much craftsmanship and thoughtfulness that they put into their work. That sometimes you don't get to see the way that it's done in like maybe a more like a mainstream comics publisher, or like the particular techniques or the types of stories that are going to be told. So yeah, if anything, listener, let that be a reason as to why you should check out Shortbox Comics Fair this year, which is happening right now, and it's happening until the end of the month in October 31st. Could you please remind me the exact time it's going to end?
So October 31st, I think 8 p.m. UK time. I'm not sure what time that is in Canadian.
8 p.m. UK time. That's going to be noon on October 31st in Pacific Standard Time in Vancouver. So go check that out. And of course, I am Leslie. I'm the host of Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM, CJSF. And I'm talking with Zainab, who is the founder and main person, the person behind Shortbox Comics Fair. With regards to the fair, have there been struggles or issues platforming independent comics?
I guess the main challenge is marketing. Again, you know, something we touched on before, where you have to do everything on your own. I feel like this concept is great. Like it's really successful. We also have the advantage of like it being something unique and you know, like genuinely there's nothing, nobody who does this, you know, there's nothing like this. So it's working, but it's really difficult because you don't have the resources. You're not able to hire people who have like marketing as the area, you know, like for me it's okay, like what do I have available to me? I have like social media platforms, I have like a newsletter, and that's kind of it. That's my reach in terms of like trying to, you know, market the fair. And I think that's the area, if there was anything, like that's a big challenge because I feel very restricted on that front. You know, we print posters and flyers, send them out to shops, but it's just really these few things that we can do. Again, the royal we. but yeah, so I feel like the big challenge is, you know, a lack of money resources, which is very sort of like general and like probably like the challenge that everybody has. But having said that, I'm still like incredibly grateful. I feel more than anything, I'm super grateful, like in terms of we have a really strong readership. You know, like people, you'll hear, I think people always deride audiences. And I'm like such a staunch believer in like the intelligence of audiences, because that's what I have experienced. You know, like these, the comics that we make, like a lot of them, you know, there's just so many different issues in there, you know, they're complex in different ways, you know, stylistically, you know, it may not always to like the average person, it may not always be accessible, but you know, it's never been an issue. That I feel like that's the key to why the fair is successful, because of like the short box readership. You know, they've always sort of aligned with what I'm doing, and I feel very lucky to like have those people, which is effectively why we're able to do this. But the area I would really like to focus on is audience growth, because I think like the idea is working, the concept is working, the comics are great. It's just about like every year I just want to try and reach more people, and be like, hey, look, this is a great idea, this is a great thing that's happening, do you know about it? So I think that's really the sort of main challenge.
Yeah, I think that's super fair. Especially, I don't know, maybe this is just a me thing. I find that marketing independent stuff, as like even on the internet, is so difficult, because there used to be, I don't know, maybe this is a my experience thing, but there used to be this idea that well, on the internet, like anybody can do it, you're it's all DIY, you're free to do whatever you want, and you just have to find your audience and stuff like that. But I've found that, like, you know, the algorithm does not really work in anyone's favor who's not, I don't know, who's not like really, really backed up, and who's not got the knowledge and expertise to know how to make it work in their favor. I find that's a really big problem that folks bump up against. Not to ask you to like pick favorites or anything or whatnot, but I was wondering, for this year at the festival, are there any comics that you'd strongly recommend that folks would check out, gems that might go unintentionally under the radar? Because a lot of the times what will happen at these fairs is like, you know, I love like Hana Chitani, for example, and I'm definitely going to check out her work, but then who else am I forgetting about, whose work I should be checking out?
Oh, this is always so difficult, because I genuinely there are so many, but I'll try and recommend a few sort of like a good mix. So the first one is, I think it's like it's over 100 pages, we've got some incredibly long comics this year. It's called Allodynia. It's by Violet Kitchen, who's like a fantastic up-and-coming cartoonist. And the comic is about two people in a relationship, and one of them is chronically ill, and the tensions that come from like their partner feeling like the guilt around, you know, the pain that their partner go through and not really being able to do that, and then how that affects both their behaviors and the impact it has on the relationship. And it's just it's like an incredible comic. I really recommend that one. And then There's a comic by this amazing French artist called El Adascovi, and it's called Hibernation Guide for Rabbits and Hares. And it has some of the most charming and delightful art that you will ever see. But it's also, those kind of stories that are both incredibly warm but also moving. It's about these small animals, and they have like a hotel where they hibernate each year. So they're preparing to sort of like, go into hibernation. So everybody's getting around, bringing their packages, getting into their rooms. And the reason that they hibernate, some of these animals traditionally they don't hibernate, but because the world outside is changing, they've decided that, they have to sort of adapt to that world. So there's also tensions between people, the animals who don't think it's necessary to hibernate, and that the others are stupid. There's a bit of social commentary in there as well. But it's the most beautiful thing that you'll both see and read. A non-fiction recommendation. There's if you can take it, because it's sort of heartbreaking, by Joyce Ng, is a comic called Felicity, and it made me cry. I think it's an experiment in the 1960s, if I remember correctly, and it was an isolation experiment that they did with the Greyland geese. This particular goose was called Felicity, so they isolated her essentially from birth, and it's just like incredibly heartbreaking. And I think the great thing about Joyce is, like, if that was me making that comic, I'd be so judgmental. I'd be like, these people are horrible, how dare they? But she just presents the case in a, like, she just sort of tells you the facts about what happened, and then, but she does it in such a way that, it's up to you to like make your mind up about, how you feel about it. But there's sort of like questions in there about like the extent of cruelty, we do in the name of like science, or like, oh, this is going to save people, so like, is that okay to like kill hundreds of innocent animals in the hope of like, oh, we might cure a person, or we might not even often not even cure a person, or we just might learn something about how a geese responds to being taken away from its mother. So yeah, I really recommend that one, but again, like, only if you're feeling up to it. I'll do one more, which is The Last Crane. It's by an artist from Thailand, called Narsid, and it's sort of like a fantasy epic. So in the beginning, it's set in an era where gods walk the earth, and there's like gods and prophets, and they interact with each other and they live with each other. And then a period comes where the gods leave the earth, but one of the prophets, the god was his lover, so when the god leaves, he's incredibly distraught, and then he goes after, like, he's sort of like mourning like this loss for like 10 years, and then he decides to go on a journey to try and find the god again. And it's so stunning, like the layouts, the colors, just visually probably one of like the most beautiful comics that you'll see. I could go on, but I'd probably leave it at 4 for you. But if anybody ever needs any recommendations, like, it's my favorite thing to do. So you can always just email me, or like, obviously on the Fair socials as well. But yeah, I just really recommend, like, even if you don't feel like you want to buy anything, I feel, of course I'm biased, but I feel like it's worth visiting and just having a look at like the scope of, like what comics can be. Even if you're just like curious and like see all the different visual styles, the different approaches, different narratives, I feel like it's worth a look.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for the recommendations, and also, capping it at 4, I feel like, is pretty reasonable because it gives folks more chances to check out all the other stuff that might go not as noticed. This has been really awesome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. I know we're a little bit past your bedtime now, so I'm gonna let you go. Again, for the curious listener, This has been my conversation with Zainab, who is the founder of Shortbox Comics Fair. It's a month-long annual digital comics fair online where more than 100 new independently published comics are exhibited and sold. I really strongly recommend that you check it out. For me, it's really been one of the places that, or one of the things that I look forward to every year as a comics reader, because I know I'm always going to be able to find really interesting stuff in there. And a lot of it is just really wondrous. The craftsmanship, the thoughtfulness that goes into creating the work is really, really cool. It's all kind of helpfully arm's length facilitated by Zainab, who has really good taste. Where can people find out more about the fair beyond just Googling?
Me, people don't Google anymore. So the website is the main place, shortboxcomicsfair.com. And then we are also on various social media, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Blue Sky, under SB Comics Fair. And those are really the places. And of course, but the website is the main one, and it's got all the information and also the email.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Michael Stein, Private Eye. Of all my sorry tales, the sorriest one is my nemesis bird. That's what us birders call a species that just keeps giving you the slip. Well, my nemesis bird is the painted bunting. A real gem of a bird. The males have blue heads, green wings, and red breasts. And the females are yellow-green. These birds love open spaces, shrubby clearings, and overgrown farm fields. I don't get out of the city much, what with my PI work. But whenever I hear about a painted bunting around, I grab my binoculars and my fedora and rush out the door. And I miss it every time. Last year, I got word of a pair of them in the city cemetery. As the rain began to pour, I jumped in my car and sped across town. I ran to the pond near where the birds had been seen. I asked a nearby birder where they were. She pointed to a tree and said, "Right there. But wait, I can't see them anymore." And then I heard their song, like a dream fading away. So I've heard, but never seen, my nemesis bird. But as I fall asleep, I see those painted buntings in all their fantastic color. Someday, I tell myself, you'll see them someday.
We are hitting the top of the hour here on Today on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. You just heard my conversation with Zainab, who is the founder of Shortbox Comics Fair, the digital annual comics fair showcasing more than 100 new comics titles from independent cartoonists from around the world. It is a really great time. I hope today's episode piqued your interest about the fair, and I really do hope that you go check it out. Find it over at shortboxcomicsfair.com. There's a lot in that conversation that I unfortunately couldn't include in the broadcast, Zainab and I had a really good conversation about the charm of independent comics, and at some point we were talking about like how risk-averse mainstream creative industries are, and then in the way that I typically do, somehow incorporated like idol groups and girl groups in there. Yeah. I wish you could have heard it all, but unfortunately, we are limited with time. But thank you again to Zainab for her time and her energy. Tune in to more great CJSF programming. Check out Bitcoover, Vancouver's only chiptune broadcast, every Tuesday from 8 to 10. It's a fun time. Check it out, 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. My name is Leslie, and you've been tuning into Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. You can follow me online on Instagram at Typically Tuesdays, and I'm signing off now. I'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.